This is the RightsCast Network at RightsCast.net. Hey there, RightsCast listener. It's show host and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell. If you're wondering where the regular intro music is, well, you won't be hearing it today. At least not in this episode, anyway. That's because this episode is the first in a new mini-series called Novel Approaches, where yours truly and writing coach Sione Ashlin discuss strategies for planning to write or actually writing a novel. Though the episodes in this mini-series are presented in a numerical order, that doesn't mean one has to, or necessarily should, address each one of the topics covered in a linear fashion when planning or writing their own novel. On the contrary, as is mentioned throughout this mini-series, the topics covered often overlap, with one feeding another feeding the next. So feel free to hop around across episodes and explore the different topics as you see fit. So what are the topics we'll be covering in this series, you ask? Well, today's episode will begin with examining concept from a writer's perspective. What it is, how it varies from an idea or inspiration, and how we can use a fully fleshed out concept to ensure our first draft provides a solid foundation for our manuscript going forward. Then, in episode 2, we'll cover concept from an editor's perspective, followed by character, plot and structure, world building, and theme in episodes 3 through 6, respectively. With that in mind, let's get to this very first episode of Novel Approaches. Thanks for listening. Well, thank you very much, Sione, for joining me for this special mini-series that I believe we're going to call Novel Approaches.
Did you like that title?
I did like that title. I have to give you credit for that. And I think we're going to roll with it because it's now in the recording for the first episode.
It's so punny.
It's very punny, but I like it in that, you know, it's that double entendre that just... I feel like we can drive that home. Our approaches, we'll find out, like, are perhaps novel from one another, but I'm sure other writers will be able to relate, at least I hope so anyway, and if they can't, maybe they can learn from what I do as a writer and what you look for as an editor, and we can maybe converge in the middle. That would be my goal for listeners anyway.
Yeah, I'm really, thank you again for having me back on, and I'm really excited about the series of conversations we've got coming up, because I know from working with you last year that you have a different approach that I find really interesting, and so I'm excited to have the chance to pick your brain about it.
Oh, cool. Well, and on that note, since you mentioned picking my brain, we're going to do things a little differently, listeners, as of course, if you're a normal listener to the show, you know I tend to throw the questions at the guest, and they give me their feedback on that. We're going to do it a little bit differently, where Sione's going to have questions for me to start, and we'll get the perspective of a writer's approach to concept, which is what we're talking about in this episode. And then once I've had a chance to give my responses, we'll turn it over to Sione, and we'll talk about what she looks for when editing for concept or something that she might call concept, which may be different from what I call concept. So we'll have a little column A, little column B, writer, and then into the editor conversation. So Sione, I'm ready when you've got your questions ready, so you take it away whenever.
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Well, first of all, congratulations. You have your debut coming out later this year.
Yay.
Accounting for it all with Nine Star Press.
Yeah, woo. Thank you. Yes, I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait to read it because I love the description that you have up. What was your inspiration for this book? Where did it start for you?
So I like that, you know, we're starting with inspiration because, of course, I feel for any writer, you know, you have to start with something. There's an idea that comes to you. And we're talking about concept in this episode, and I think that works out really well because I'd kind of like to draw a distinction between inspiration and concept, with inspiration as being sort of a gateway that gets us to concept. And so, you know, I mentioned you might have a different definition of concept than I do. And so before we even get into the inspiration for accounting for it all, I thought it would be cool to kind of lay out what I look for in concept when I sit down as a writer to make sure that I've got myself on what I consider for me to be the quote unquote right path. So when I'm looking at concept, I consider that to be the bare minimum I need to have what I would call that concept is a character who must act before a deadline or face a consequence. So again, that's four separate things that I consider myself as having to have a general idea of before I'll sit down and say, okay, I've got something that I can really work with here to turn into a full novel. So again, that's a character that must take an action of some kind before a deadline of some kind or face consequences of some kind. And so with that in mind, you know, there's also this angle that can get worked into concept, and that's this idea of, you know, you probably hear it on movie trailers. I think it used to be a little more popular than it is now, but the movie trailer would start with something like, in a world where, and then it's, you know, whatever thing it is. And I think that that's something that can play a really big role in concept also, but you see that more in speculative fiction. And accounting for it all, of course, is it's just contemporary fiction. I don't have, like, a great conceit at play where there's a bunch of world building going on in the background. So in a world where is something that you'll also see come into play with concept if you're writing, especially sci-fi and fantasy.
In our conversations leading up to this conversation, I like the way that you put it in your email, which is X, which is the character. X must do Y before Z, or this thing will happen. And what I like about that is that it includes something that I don't often have on my radar, which is a sense of urgency. And that's that deadline part.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also, when you're talking about in a world where that, like, adding in the premise of the story, I think that's all really very interesting.
Yeah, and I like how you frame that as premise also, because I had never considered kind of consolidating it into a single word. And the example I was thinking of, this was just the first one that came to me when I was thinking of in a world where, as part of this conversation, was the movie Children of Men, where it's like, in a world where the last human child was born, you know, however long ago it is, and that really is sort of like the premise that you're laying out, and then it evolves into a concept once you get the character and what they must do and by when they must do it, otherwise, you know, the fate of humanity is at stake. And those are really high stakes or are consequences for that particular concept.
Mm-hmm. So lay that out a little bit in terms of how you thought about accounting for it all.
Yeah, certainly. And that'll tie back into, of course, inspiration as the gateway to concept. So for me, accounting for it all started with character, which is one of those four, I guess you could call them, pillars of concept. And that was just, I don't know, I really wish I had a better memory for how it came together, but it was sometime during tax season of 2017, and I was joking with a friend about how I had some tricky things I needed to do with my accounting for the year, and I should have become an accountant, and he said something about, like, or, you know, you could have always just got into porn and collected cash for everything and not had to worry about it. And it evolved into a strange joke where I started thinking, like, man, what if someone was both a porn star and an accountant? I don't know. Totally bizarre thought. And I was like, or what if they were a porn star that became an accountant? What would that, you know, the gears start churning? And yeah, it just kind of came together in a very strange way. So that was the inspiration. And it was started with that character. But, you know, at that exact moment, I didn't have anything else that I could throw together with that character to build up what I would consider to be a full concept. But for me, it started with character in this case.
And so then how does that formula, X must do Y before Z, how does that play out for accounting for it all?
The way that I pitched it is I have it set up such that the overarching, you know, concept behind it is a porn star turned accountant must account for years worth of money laundering to which she had no idea she was a part before the IRS comes through and conducts their audit, or she'll, of course, be spending time in prison, etc. So her main goal throughout is to show that she was not complicit in this, even though she was, I guess, aiding this money laundering scheme. So she's just kind of oblivious. This was going on in the background. She was an accountant in name only kind of thing. And that's how that concept came together overall. And I also have the subplots as well for this one. It was really important to me to make sure that those were sound. And so I introduced full concepts for those too. So we have one subplot where we have our main character, Robin. She's this porn star turned accountant. And she also must make amends with her terminally ill mother, from whom she is estranged, before her mother passes away. So she also has that going on for her. And then we also have the romance line that runs throughout it. And that, since this is a romantic suspense, the romance is a really big part of this. And that line is something along, I would phrase it like, a porn star turned accountant must capitalize on her final chance to be with the woman she's always loved before she disappears from her life forever, kind of thing. Those were the three main threads that kind of run throughout it where concept is concerned.
So that's interesting. So in when you were thinking about this, what you focused on was the external, like the suspense plot as the basis for the main concept rather than the romance, which is, even though it's a romance suspense, Is that right?
Yeah, and the way that that actually happened was I did not even plan on the romance being a big part of the book when I first sat down to write it. So the concept was originally just about the accounting side of things, and it was going to be kind of this lighthearted farce in a way. I meant it to be more of like a shenanigans kind of story, but I wrote the first, I don't know, it was maybe 30,000 words, and I got to this scene where I decided my main character needed a confidant. And so I introduced this character that was her best friend going back however many years. And once I threw these two characters on the page, like there was just something going on. And it was something that I didn't plan on being part of it, but there was just this really interesting like depth to the relationship between the two of them that just kind of happened as I was writing one scene in particular. And so I stopped at that 30,000 word mark or whatever it might have been. And I went back, and at that point, you know, and this kind of bleeds into outlining and developing plot a little bit, but I adjusted my plot and introduced this new concept so that I could have that running as a separate thread throughout.
Yeah. Well, and what I like about what you're saying about the subplots too, A, I really like how intentional and thoughtful you are about approaching them. I can't claim the same for my own fiction, but also the subplots, if I'm understanding them correctly, one of them acts as a further obstacle to the main plot's concept, the main goal, right? There's an extra layer of complication there.
Yeah, certainly. They all play off one another in that she's obviously in some very deep business needing to address this severe money laundering scandal that she's a part of. She's the only quote-unquote accountant that's at the place she works, which is called Pornucopia. So when the IRS comes through, has to be responsible for that. And so she's kind of pulled between that and also this need to make amends with her mother, who's very ill, and also this love interest who's now in town and is kind of like, hey, I'd like to see you if you still want to be friends. And so she's forced to juggle these three major things all at once.
Yeah, and who among us has not had to juggle competing goals and interests? So I like the levels of complexity that adds. And the romance subplot sounds like it also adds to the stakes, because if she goes to jail, then she doesn't get to rekindle this romance.
And in the same way, she also doesn't have an opportunity to ever see her mother again before her mom passes, because at this time, the main character is living in Florida, as she has been for 8 years, whereas her family is from and still lives in Kansas.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they both contribute to the stakes and act as I don't know if obstacles is the right word here, but definitely they make it harder for her to do what she needs to do because she's torn between those three things.
Yeah, that was certainly the idea.
Yeah, that's rad. So when you were working, you talked a little bit about inspiration before and where the idea started, and then you developed the concept. But at what point did you decide that this was a novel, and not like a short story that you wanted to write? And then B, as opposed to just another idea that sits on the shelf, because I don't know about you, but I have a bazillion ideas, and very few of them actually make it to story form, much less make it into novel form.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I have a ton of, you know, their ideas, or maybe even some what I would call concepts that are sitting around, and I just haven't got to them yet, because just like the protagonist in Accounting for It All, we have so many competing interests, so we can only tackle so many projects at once. But in the case of Accounting for It All, I started the very same night trying to force my way through, you know, all right, I'm going to start filling out these character sheets. I'm going to develop this character right now. I'm going to sit here and do a broad brushstrokes plot outline. But I felt like it wasn't really coming together. Like I had this weird sort of like matchstick house of an idea, and it was all driven by this character. But I didn't, at that time, I hadn't yet figured out what my deadline was. I didn't know what the consequences were going to be. I just had this character, and I was trying to lead her down a trail through the woods that hadn't been blazed by someone with a map previously. There was no map yet. I hadn't given that to myself. So without having that concept sort of sorted in advance, I didn't know if it was going to become a novel. I thought maybe this might just be a cool idea for a character that I can write some short stories about. And it wasn't until I took the time to take some deep breaths and think critically about how I wanted to construct a concept that I realized, hey, I think there's a way that I can take this concept and then throw that on. What I ended up ultimately doing was using Joseph Campbell's No Relation, the hero's journey structure to kind of take me from concept into plot, and then I knew that I could have enough to support an entire novel.
And I'm just curious, maybe this is indefinable, but what was it about this that made you want to pursue it?
I think it was because there was something really interesting to me about the kind of person that would go from a career as an adult film star and transition into something that I personally would consider very unsexy, which is just working with numbers all day. And that's, you know, no disrespect to anyone in either of those professions. I just thought that there was like some really interesting interplay. And so that was kind of what led me down this path of like, well, how would someone go from this profession to that profession? What would that transition be like? How many different ways could that work out for a different person in a different set of circumstances? And it kind of just took off from there.
And so you found yourself really intrigued by the backstory.
Yes.
Not once you had the idea. Yeah. And so then you started exploring that. And then did other ideas sort of present themselves, or did you have to work at it?
So I had to work at it in that I knew that since character was the inspiration, that even though, you know, once I had my concept sort of fleshed out, I was going to need to pay a lot of attention to character. And I know we're going to do a whole episode on like character sort of creation and figuring out their attributes, I guess, for lack of a better word. So I won't go too deep into that, but I knew that character was going to be at the heart of this because that was what pulled me into wanting to write the story. And so I knew if I focused on that, hopefully that would be what would pull readers into wanting to read that story.
Yeah. It's just so interesting for me to hear about how it, you know, how the magic happens for the
writers. Right. So. I think I kind of fell into this one, honestly, because it's a different approach than I've used for past novels, but this is the one that seems to have, you know, caught lightning in a bottle, if we're going to use that expression. So why not roll with it, right?
Clearly, I mean, it got picked up by a publisher, so.
Yeah, and I'm very thrilled about that.
So sort of speaking, kind of stepping away a little bit from this particular book and just talking about your process in general. And this is one of the ways in which I think your process and my process, I perceive, are quite different. Because I think of you as a plotter. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, absolutely.
So why is it important to you to have a sense of the concept before you even start writing your first draft?
I was thinking about that when you asked me that question by email as part of this conversation. And one of the first, of course, as writers, we like to work in metaphor. And the metaphor that came to me was thinking about a novel like putting up like a huge tent, you know? You need to have stakes to put into the ground if that tent is ever going to stay in place and be able to stand on its own. Because you can spend all the time in the world, you know, like designing your tent and deciding what neat features it might have, like zipper windows, or if you're going to put sun flaps on it, rain guards, something, I don't know, a place to hang your lantern, whatever it is, what colors you want to do. But at the end of the day, like, you can have a really cool design for a tent, but if you forget to grab stakes to nail it into the ground, that tent could blow away at any time. And so for me, I kind of see concept as the stakes. Like, we want to make sure that we've got the number of stakes that we need to keep this story grounded. And then from once we've got stakes, we can work on things like our tent poles, which might be things like plot. And then we throw character over the top of it, and where we decide to place our tent is the setting. And I don't know, it kind of builds from there. So I want to make sure, in my case at least, that my tent isn't going to blow away in the very least. By the time I finish that first episode, I just want a tent that isn't going to get picked up in the wind and be shown to be nothing more than just, some canvas flapping in the wind.
And you like to have that sense of security going into the first draft, that you're anchored in those main elements of the story. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say that that's fair, because it's, for me, I've written, let's see, one full manuscript that was, I won't say entirely pantsing, because I knew that I wanted to have like this big M. Night Shyamalan / Fight Club plot twist at the end. And that was fine, but it didn't, at the end of the day, have the structure that I felt it needed to support this like cool ending. It was like, I didn't have a deadline, and so it was just the story of a guy, and he was just kind of hanging out, and I was slowly setting up this big twist, and it didn't quite come together for me. And so I know for a lot of other writers, like pantsing can be super effective. I've had people on this show, like Daniel Swenson, for example, back in, I believe, episode 10, who talked about how successful pantsing has been for him. And so if it works for you, that's awesome. But for me, I guess I've had the best success and least frustration in getting the story as quote unquote right as I would like it to be by making sure that I at least have things like concepts sorted out in advance.
Yeah, well, it definitely strikes me as a more efficient approach than, for example, mine.
Right. I take it then that you're very much a pantser then.
Yeah, to start. But I mean, it seems more efficient, your approach. And I'm also hearing that, like, you spent all this time writing this draft of this story and then got to the end and realized it didn't work. And then that can be a huge barrier for writers. Instead of going back and editing and figuring out, you know, how to change things, what needs to change in order for it to work, I think a lot of people at that point just give up and they're like, okay, not this one, the next one.
And that's, I'll say from my experience, that's exactly what happened. I finished that first manuscript. I ran it through my critique group. They had an opportunity to see the whole thing. Their feedback was really helpful in making me realize the things that I just described where it just wasn't quite holding up. You know, it didn't have the stakes holding that tent into the ground. And so maybe someday I'll go back and rewrite it. I know exactly what I would do for the concept, but it's one of those things where, like we've talked about already, there's so many other projects to work on and so many other like exciting little rabbits to chase. And I think I'd like an opportunity to chase some fresh rabbits before I go back and visit the one that I've half caught and then released, or I don't know, metaphor.
I know. I get myself in trouble with that too. It's yeah. Like when I'm at the limitations of the metaphor.
It only goes
like,
so far. It only goes so far.
Yeah. So how much information do you like to have before you start writing that first draft? I know you already mentioned concept, which is character, goal, urgency, stakes, and then maybe sometimes premise, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What other things do you like to have? And then, and also, what's your process? How do you get that information?
Sure. So like you said, concept is obviously a big part of this. But before I sit down and write, I like to have at least done research on what it is I know I'm going to need to execute, like on the character side and on the concept as a whole, which can be tricky because until we're writing, like really writing, we might not know what we need to know. Like for my current work in progress, I just kind of decided at one point that one of my characters was going to have a hedgehog for a pet. And so I was like, well, I don't have a hedgehog for a pet. So I had to do some research, you know, as I was writing. But for accounting for it all, for example, research was really important. That's something that I wanted to have done in advance because I have neither been an adult film star nor have I been an accountant. And so making sure that I went out of my way to, for example, I got this big book of essays that were written by folks that had worked in porn previously. I watched some documentaries, including one that was literally about like people transitioning out of that world and into what you would consider a day job, things like that. So just trying to like get the research down for as much as I know I'm going to need to support at least my main character is really important. And then once I have that research done, and maybe, you know, these kinds of things can be happening at the same time. So I shouldn't present it so in such a linear fashion, but research. And then I like to get a plot outline, at least a very broad one to start. It would be great if I have it scene by scene, which I did for Accounting for It All before I started writing, at least the first draft. But for the plot outline, I want to make sure that I'm using either, like I mentioned, Accounting for It All. I went with the hero's journey. So there's the 12 steps of that. We'll cover that in a later episode of this miniseries, I'm sure. There's also 7-point structure, which I'm sure, again, we'll talk about in plot. And then there's this circular structure, which is kind of new to me, and I haven't put it to great use yet, but I really like it as a storytelling approach. And so it's something that I'm hoping to implement in a novel or a short story at some point. But the idea behind circular structure is you kind of boil off certain steps in the hero's journey and bring it into like this idea that characters ultimately end back up where they started but changed, and they have 8 steps along the way that they will undergo, and every story has like this cyclical feel to it, basically. So, you know, again, we'll get more detail on that in a later episode, but aside from research, plot outline, I also like to know character. So that includes, you know, doing a mass brainstorm for all the book's major players, especially the main character, the love interest, if there is one, the mentor, any sidekicks, of course, having the antagonist fleshed out as well. And then I like to have kind of an idea of theme, which is a really nebulous thing to try and nail down before you've written a word, but just an idea of what, like, the book is quote unquote about is always a good thing to have in mind, I think, when writing.
Yeah, and I have a hard, like, I know theme when I see it, and I can say, okay, this is a theme of this movie or this work or whatever it is. But I find that people's definitions of theme are different. And you did say nebulous, but roughly speaking, like, or maybe using Accounting for It All as an example, like, how would you define theme?
So theme... And this is a tricky one, and that's why I'm really up in the air about how we could even tackle that as a separate episode as part of this miniseries, because I feel like there's so much to say, but it's so difficult to express. But I guess we'll go with Accounting for It All, and I see the theme in that, just to provide an example, as being that the journey to self-actualization requires one to be honest, not only with the rest of the world, but with yourself about the person you are and what you believe and what it is you want to pursue. And so I see self-actualization really as at the core of the whole narrative. And so I kind of consider that to be the theme.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tricky one because even the idea of self-actualization means so many different things to so many people. But that's the direction I feel like it went anyway.
It does, yeah. So when you have all of these elements that you just talked about, concept, research, the plot outline, a sense of your characters and the theme, you've got all that and you're going to go write your first draft. What are your goals for that first draft? How do you know when it's done?
So for me, I will know that a first draft is quote unquote done when it fulfills the concept that I set out to fulfill. And maybe I should rephrase that actually, because it's not sometimes about fulfilling the concept, but fulfilling a concept. Because one of the things that I think it's important for me anyway to try and stress as we work our way through this series of podcasts is that an outline is, in my view, a very efficient and practical way to go about writing, but an outline is not a contract. If, for example, I were to have said, you know what, I'm not going to introduce this romance subplot into Accounting for It All because it wasn't part of my original concept, I don't have it accounted for in my plot, I'm just going to throw it to the side and we're just going to plow forward and, you know, whatever, I'm going to just discard it. Well, I think it would have lost the emotional drive behind the entire story. And allowing that to come into the fold, even though it wasn't part of my original concept, you know, had I not allowed that to come in, I would have ended up with a story that just didn't have the soul it needed. And so for me, when I'm writing a first draft, I want to just make sure that I fulfill a concept, no matter what direction that takes, so long as I'm making, you know, those 4 to 5 pillars present in the book and I'm executing on those, cool. That's a draft in my view. It doesn't matter if I've got some scenes of wandering in between, I can tighten all that up later. It's, you know, if you have to explore your way from one spot to the next, that's whatever it needs to be, but making sure that there's a concept present, that's where I consider a first draft to be complete.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned being open to things changing as one goes through this process of writing, because I think that you gave a great example of why that's so important. But I also think that it's easy to hear about other people's processes, and in order for them, including myself, to explain the process, it comes across as kind of linear.
Right.
But I don't think that that's the reality at all, that it's very recursive, that it's always, you're always making adjustments and going back and figuring out, okay, now this new thing, my character has just said that this person that I thought was alive is dead. That actually happened to me one time. So
that's quite the change.
Okay, now I got to go back and like refigure out this whole thing. And that's just part of it, that it's not going to come out this, at least not for me. And I'm actually super encouraged that even though you're a plotter, it doesn't come out that way for you. It makes me feel better.
Well, and I'll say this too, like, again, Accounting for It All was the exception in terms of like, yeah, I by and large stuck with it. I threw in that romance plot at one point, but with my current work in progress, I have like, I'm doing this sort of no man's land between plotting and like pantsing, where it's like, well, I know what my concept is and I know where I need to get my characters at these points in the story. But just like you said, you had an example where a character went from alive to dead or vice versa. Today, I had a situation where I had to completely back into and out of, this character has access to this information now, or do I need to introduce that later? And I know that several scenes ago that will totally make everything fall apart, but I'm just going to plow forward and fix the continuity errors later because I just need to trust where it's going right now. I'm just going to trust where it's going, even though I have this outline of sorts, because I think if we trust the action, reaction, consequence chain, that can only follow us to like higher stakes and a better story at the end of the day.
And I know what you're talking about, but when just to explain a little bit, what do you mean by action, reaction, consequence chain? Because this might not be familiar to everyone.
Sure, yeah, I can definitely jump into that. And that's something that I think will be really cool to cover in the plot episode also. But just briefly, the idea behind an action, reaction, consequence chain is another way to put it, I guess, and we'll use the sort of a tired old expression perhaps, is that you have this character who is going to take one step forward and then two steps back at many times. You know, for everything that your character does to try and achieve the goal that you've laid out as part of their concept, there's going to have to be pushback from their antagonizing force. And so you have the action on the part of your protagonist, and then you have a reaction from your antagonist or your antagonizing force. And in allowing that interplay, you know, it's like, I don't know, if you're playing pinball or something like that, let's go down metaphor road here. You're playing pinball, you got your flipper, and you just keep hitting the ball in the same spot over and over again. Well, over time, you're just going to keep bouncing faster and faster, and eventually someone's going to break, right? And that's kind of what it's nice to have in a novel, is this protagonist pushes, antagonist pushes back, and the shoving only gets more intense as we advance, and those actions and reactions only become more severe to create this great chain that builds us up to our second plot point, or, you know, the resurrection and the hero's journey, for example.
Yeah. Would it be fair to... I'm glad I asked you, because I think that you do think about it differently than
I do. Oh, cool. Cool. Yeah. Well, then tell me how you think about it.
In a more complex way. I mean, would it be fair to say, so action, reaction, consequence, like something happens, mm-hmm. the character reacts to it, there's a consequence to that reaction, and then it starts it all over again.
Yes, that sounds really actually similar to something that I talk about in episode 13 of the Rights Cast, which is the one on scene structure. And that's that at the heart of every scene, you have a goal for your protagonist, a conflict arises, there's a resolution to that conflict, whether it means, you know, we're moving forward or backward, and then there's a cliffhanger or change moment to propel us forward based on the action in that scene.
That is an episode that is on my to-listen-to list. And I'm glad that you brought it up now, because that reminds me. I really like the way that you think about it, each scene, that intentionally, too.
Yeah, and that's how, and we'll get into that with plot when we're talking about outlining, because that is, yeah, every scene, when I sit down to write it, I literally lay those things out as bullet points, and then I establish what all of those components are, and then I execute like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, ad infinitum until I've reached the end of the book, basically.
Oh my God, that sounds exhausting.
It is a little bit, but it's, you get a nice rhythm, you know? It's a nice 1, 2, 3, 4 rhythm. We're going from...
But also, again, it sounds like if you have that idea when you sit down to write, it would just make the writing process, like, that sounds very comforting.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to open, because I'm a morning writer, so I, like, roll out of bed with my coffee and I'm here. I like to be able to open up my document in Scrivener and look at it and say, oh, this is what I'm writing today. Oh, mm-hmm. This is what I'm writing today, instead of opening it up and panicking because there's a blank screen in front of me.
Yeah.
One thing that's also worth noting, like, let's say you develop a concept and you sit down and you write a manuscript and you're like, awesome, I executed my concept, but I'm only at 40,000 words and I was really hoping to write a novel. Well, never fear, because as we kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, one of the cool things you can do is create subplots that also have that full like meat of a concept to them. And then what you do is, rather than lay out, you know, all 12 steps of the hero's journey or whichever plot structure you're using, you can kind of just pick where they crest and fall and give them an arc of their own that's not perhaps as detailed, but still very relevant to the plot that you're using overall. And guess what? You can tack in another 20,000 words while you explore that subplot. Or maybe it's another, you throw two subplots in there and you end up like accounting for it all, which, you know, the manuscript that's sitting with my editor right now, I believe, came in just under 90,000 words. So you'd be amazed at how much it changes if you can throw those subplots in and make sure that they also have a concept behind them as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, point and a good strategy if you want to make something longer. And also, it could be a novella.
Yeah, certainly. And sometimes that works perfectly. Like I recently had the privilege of doing some editing work for a romance writer, and it's 60,000 words. So I think in romance, you can certainly call that novel length, but it kind of read as a novella at first. And one of the things that I really loved about it was that there weren't these sort of like interjecting, there weren't these subplots that were getting in the way of like the love story that was at the core of it. And the love story was like, it was constructed with characters that were strong enough such that like, that was what was required to tell that story. It didn't need, and it doesn't need another like 20 to 30,000 words to like amp up its stakes, because I was drawn in enough in this case by the heart, you know, of this story. And so sometimes, yeah, leave it at 60,000, leave it at 40,000 and do it as a novella. There's no need to like turn it up to 10 if your story is executing on all levels at 8. I don't know, if we're using a volume kind of thing.
Yeah, well, and what I want to tie the point you're making now to what we talked about earlier about the role of subplots, that it's, you know, sometimes I think we're like, oh, we need to make it longer, let's put in a subplot. But actually the subplots need to relate directly to that primary conflict, or what did you call it again? Concept, I guess.
Yeah, they kind of need to tie in or play off of that primary. They need to compete with that concept, and not in terms of like, you know, for attention necessarily, because you don't want to totally muddle your plot lines, but they need to compete with one another for like the direction in which they pull your protagonist, I guess.
Yeah, another way to think about it is like they need to either be catalysts or obstacles, or both usually. They play both roles depending on where you are in the narrative on your main plot line. But they're either an obstacle to the main character getting what they want, or they're a catalyst in terms of helping them get what they want or inspiring them to go on the journey even.
And so concludes episode 1 of Novel Approaches. Thanks for tuning in. Next episode, we'll resume the conversation by taking a look at concept from the perspective of an editor. What will Sione have to say about what she looks for when evaluating concept in a writer's manuscript? You'll have to tune in to find out. I'd like to extend my sincere thanks on behalf of the WritesCast Network to Kristen Oakley, who's achieved Wise Mentor status over at patreon.com/WritesCast for her contribution of $3 per episode. Kristen's patronage goes a long way into helping the WritesCast Network move toward becoming self-sustaining, and we really appreciate her support. If you'd like to become a member of the WritesCast Network family in exchange for awesome patron rewards, head over to patreon.com/WritesCast, where you can contribute to the show at $1 or even $2 per episode. If you have any feedback on the show, or just have questions on concept in general, you can find us online at WritesCast.net, or email us at WritesCast@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter as WritesCast, or you can find each of the Novel Approaches hosts at IamRRCampbell and WriteLearnDream. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, you know what to do. Write on and write well. This is the WritesCast Network at WritesCast.net.